You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 2 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We've had a full 2 days of the Alec Baldwin Rust shooting trial, and it feels like a week. So much has been covered, including intense opening statements from both the defense and prosecution, witness testimony from those on scene directly after Helena Hutchins was shot, heart-wrenching on-set footage. And inside the courtroom every day, we have Alec Baldwin, Alec Baldwin's wife, Hilaria Baldwin, his brother, Stephen Baldwin, and sister Elizabeth supporting him. On the other side of the courtroom, sitting away from Alec Baldwin and his family, is well-known attorney Gloria Allred, representing Helena Hutchins' family and her parents in the courtroom. Now, a little teaser, I was honored that Gloria, a woman I've admired for years due to her work with women's rights, accepted an interview with me. You don't want to miss what Gloria had to say, because she did not mince words. She never does. If you are new to this case, I highly recommend listening to our previous episodes covering this case, which I will link in the show notes, so you can catch up on everything leading to where we are now. As we cover this trial, there are a few burning questions that Dr. John and I want to hopefully find answers to. Here are a few of them. Is an actor responsible for a gun they hold in their hand, despite the responsibility of other members of the film crew on set? Will members of the jury, who will likely know or have at least heard of Alec Baldwin, an extremely high-profile Hollywood actor and celebrity, be able to give him a fair and impartial verdict? If the jury believes Alec pulled the trigger on the film set, is that still considered an accident, or does that show criminal negligence? Do Alec's own words, where he says he knows how dangerous blank rounds can be when they are fired and that they can kill people, hurt him in this case? Are human beings capable of accepting something as an accident? Or does it depend on the type of accident? Or what about the person? What if the accident involves an A-list celebrity with a history of anger? Do these things influence how people view an accident? Do all accidents resulting in the death of another human being need to be litigated in the criminal justice system? And what does justice for Helena Hutchins, the beloved wife, mother, and cinematographer who lost her life, look like? From what we already know, there seems to be several failures on the set of Rust that point to Helena's tragic death. Number one, how did live rounds get on this set to begin with? I really, really want the answer to this question. Number two, armorer Hannah Gutierrez-Reed failed in her job responsibilities to ensure safety on set and failed to check the gun for dummy rounds. Number three, first assistant director, the AD David Halls, failed to thoroughly check the gun. Number four, Alec Baldwin cocked back the hammer of the gun, pointed the gun towards Helena Hutchins, and then, as the prosecution believes, pulled the trigger. But that is something Alec Baldwin has adamantly denied. So with that, let's get into opening statements. Prosecutor Erlinda Johnson gave the opening statement for the prosecution. She really zeroed in on the gun, emphasizing how Alec Baldwin insisted on having the largest one possible. She pointed out that the film was operating on a tight budget and used this to paint a picture of Alec as reckless. She also accused Alec of breaking the cardinal rules of gun safety by pointing a gun at someone and pulling the trigger, emphasizing that the gun was in perfect working condition and did not malfunction, thus implying the trigger was pulled. She said, quote, The evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, like in many workplaces, there are people who act in a reckless manner and place other individuals in danger and act without due regard for the safety of others. When you pretend with a real gun in a real workplace and break the essential gun safety rules, you're putting lives at risk and someone can get killed. The evidence will show that the person who pretended with a real gun and ignored these fundamental safety rules is Alexander Baldwin, end quote.
You will see him using this gun as a pointer to point at people, to point at things. You will see him cock the hammer when he's not supposed to cock the hammer. You will see him put his finger on the trigger when his finger's not supposed to be on the trigger. You will hear about numerous breaches of firearm safety with this defendant and this use of this firearm. And the evidence will show that on the morning of October 21st, 2021, the camera crew walked off set. And you will learn that one of the reasons that camera crew walked out is because they were concerned over safety breaches with the use of firearms. The evidence will show that the morning of October 21st started out a couple of hours behind. They filmed some scenes at this church on the Bonanza Creek Ranch. And you will see that one of those scenes required the defendant to pull out his gun. This was in the morning, pull out his gun. And you'll hear the director tell him, pull it out and hold it. And the first time, you'll see evidence the defendant does what the director tells him. But you will hear the director tell you that many times the defendant would do his own thing. So then the director in the morning asked him, okay, do it again, just like you did now. The defendant pulls out the gun, but this time he cocks the hammer. The evidence will show they then broke for lunch. And around 1:30 or so, they came back to this church to do what's called a blocking. The evidence will show that Ms. Hutchins wanted to do a blocking for an insert. And you will learn what a blocking is, just working out the details of the moves of the actor. It wasn't even a rehearsal. You will hear from one of the witnesses who walked into the church and saw the defendant kind of playing with his gun. And then you will see evidence or hear evidence that Ms. Hutchins and Mr. Souza were talking to the defendant about doing this insert. And the insert was just supposed to be from here to here. And it was supposed to be of the defendant just slowly taking his gun out of this holster, out of his holster, and just holding it at an angle. The evidence will show that someone asked the armorer to bring the defendant's gun to him. And she did. She brought it into the church, showed it to David Halls, who you will learn was the first assistant director. The gun was empty. Ms. Gutierrez then handed the gun to the defendant. But then you will hear that Ms. Gutierrez was given the gun back, and she took it and loaded it with dummy rounds. And what you will learn is that dummy rounds are inert rounds. They look like real rounds, but they are very easy to tell that they are not because they'll rattle. Ms. Gutierrez then went back to the church, showed the revolver to the first assistant director very fast. They only checked about three rounds, very quick. And they missed one round. You will learn that one of the rounds in that revolver was a real round. And the evidence will show that Ms. Gutierrez then handed the gun to the defendant. And what you will learn is that once again, the defendant failed to do a gun check or a safety check with this armor. So he takes the firearm, puts it in his holster. Then Ms. Hutchins and Mr. Souza were doing this blocking. And the evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, that the defendant again did his own thing.
She again emphasized to the jury that the gun used in the Rust shooting was in perfect working order. She mentioned that the company responsible for the gun had confirmed it passed all quality control tests. She said that after the shooting, Baldwin started saying he didn't pull the trigger, to which she said, quote, "The evidence will show, ladies and gentlemen, that's not possible." She ended by telling the jury that the only way to deliver justice for Hutchins is to return a guilty verdict for involuntary manslaughter. The defense, in their opening statement by Alex Spiro, pinned the blame on the film's armorer, Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, and the first assistant director, David Halls, saying they were supposed to ensure the gun was safe and that no real bullets were in it before it was given to Alec Baldwin. The defense played a 911 call in which you can hear the caller say, quote, "The fucking AD," end quote. AD, assistant director, showing that in the immediate aftermath, the film crew at the scene did not blame Alec Baldwin.
The gun goes off. Everybody's shocked. Alec is startled. He immediately says, I didn't pull the trigger. Immediately. What the hell just happened? They collectively explain. Shock turns to panic. 911 is called.
Out at Bonanza Creek Ranch right now. We've had two people shot on a movie set accidentally.
He said someone was shot?
Two people accidentally with gunshots at on movie set, Bonanza Creek Ranch.
Okay, send it. I'll connect you with medical dispatch. Don't
need that. Santa Fe Fire and EMS, what's the location of emergency?
Bonanza Creek Ranch has had two people accidentally shot on a movie set by a prop gun. We need help immediately. Okay. This fucking AD that yelled at me at lunch because asking about revisions. This motherfucker, did you see him lean over my desk and yell at me? Just the gun. He's responsible for what happened.
Are you now, Mimi?
No. I'm a script supervisor.
How many people are injured?
Two that I know of. We were rehearsing and it went off and I ran out.
Accidentally shot?
On a movie set with a prop gun. The fucking AD, it was his responsibility.
Alex Spiro went on to describe how, quote, "This was a tragic accident, but Alec Baldwin didn't commit a crime. He was just acting, playing his character, Harlan Rust. An actor can do dangerous things in a role. These so-called cardinal rules don't apply on a movie set," end quote. Basically saying that Alec was being Harlan Rust and actors aren't required to come back to real life and that they rely on others to help them.
The evidence will show that real bullets are never supposed to be on movie sets. Movie sets use dummies and blanks. Movie sets use dummies, fake inert bullets that look like real bullets, they don't go bang, for when you want a close-up of the gun. You can't tell them apart from live bullets by looking at them, which is why live bullets can be nowhere near a movie set. And if the director wants a shot of the gun going, you know, bang, poof, there's blanks that they can use. And those blanks look nothing like real bullets. And they are used for those shooting scenes. And, you know, they'll play these videos that they described of Alex, you know, firearm in the movie going bang, poof. You know, and people are conditioned to seeing people firing weapons and thinking that's a dangerous act. That's a dangerous act. And they will play those videos and give you that image to try to tarnish him in your eyes. But that's not what happened here. On this set, there was a real bullet, something that should never be on a movie set, something which has nothing to do with making a movie. And you will hear no evidence, not one word, that Alec Baldwin had anything to do with that real bullet being brought onto that set. The prop gun was placed in Mr. Baldwin's hands and cold gun was announced, meaning it had been checked and double checked by those responsible to ensure the gun was safe. It was just a prop. They all thought it was just a prop and could do no harm. The actor's job is to act, to rehearse, to choreograph his moves, to memorize his lines. He's Harlan Rust. He's an outlaw running for his life, who in the incident in question, he's pulling a six shooter to try to defend himself. That's why the gun has to be safe before it gets into the actor's hands. His mind is somewhere else, in the being of another, a century away, an outlaw. He must be able to take that weapon and use it as the person he's acting would. To wave it, to point it, to pull the trigger like actors do. In ways that would be lethal in the real world, but are not lethal on a movie set. What were Helena Hutchins, the cinematographer, Joel Souza, the director, and Alec Baldwin, the actor, doing on Bonanza Creek Ranch? You know, movies and magic have always been closely associated. The first people that made movies were magicians. And this imagination that happens in movies, you know, King Kong, he can stand above a city, and Superman can fly, horses and snakes and gun battles. For this to all work, for cinematography, what Helena did to work, for acting to work, you have to be so close to the barrier of real and imagined that the viewer feels that they're there, that it's real. The viewer can't see strings from the stuntman. The stuntman must leap. The snake must hiss. And guns happen in movies all over this country for many decades. Bang, bang. You've all seen it.
He explained that before Baldwin took the gun for rehearsal, it was labeled a, quote, cold gun, end quote, meaning it had been checked and was supposed to be safe. He clarified that a cold gun meant it shouldn't have any bullets, not even fake ones. He emphasized that the evidence will demonstrate Alec Baldwin's shocking grief over the incident. He pointed out that Baldwin met with Helena Hutchins' family and repeatedly reached out to law enforcement, offering to cooperate with them. And spoiler alert, Gloria Allred set the record straight on that when I interviewed her. Keep listening. He also went over a major point of contention that we knew the defense would bring up, and that is the fact that the weapon that killed Helena was destroyed by the FBI before the defense had a chance to test it. A central element for the jury to consider in this case is whether or not Alec pulled the trigger, which Alex Spiro argued is impossible for their team of experts to review because, quote, the prosecution knew the gun would be destroyed, end quote, when it was sent for testing. One thing that we don't typically see a lot in criminal cases are objections during opening statements. However, in this case, the prosecution objected during the defense's opening statement, not just once, but three times. Both the lead prosecutor, Kerry Morrissey, and defense attorney Alex Spiro have zealously argued their sides in pre-trial hearings, which at times became very heated. So much so that even the judge had some fiery comments for them. So going off of the fact that in opening statements, we already had multiple objections, one thing is clear. This trial will not be lacking any courtroom theater antics and drama. Many continue to ask where I shop, and the truth is I rent most of the clothes I wear. Armoire allows me to build the perfect wardrobe with high-quality brands that make me feel ready for any breaking news. It's as easy as taking their 5-minute style quiz, then selecting items from a personalized closet, which are then delivered straight to your door in just a couple of days. And then when you're ready for new clothes and ready for someone else to do your laundry, you just swap them out for fresh styles. Armoire has allowed me to branch out and try new styles out of my comfort zone. I get to shop for new clothes every month and then swap them out for more, which also means John doesn't get crowded out of our shared closet. So it's a win-win. Right now, our gems can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off their first month. That is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/hiddentruecrime. That's Armoire, Armoire.style/hiddentruecrime to get up to 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear again. Try Armoire today. Anyone else out there experience times when they feel really down and only want to eat things that are fried and dipped in chocolate? No, just me. Look, I have admitted to feeling all sorts of body discomfort, but perimenopause makes it a lot more unpredictable, and I just don't know what is coming next. If there is anyone out there who can relate, I recommend Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is a supplement for any woman experiencing symptoms of hormone imbalance, including perimenopause, menopause, even postmenopause. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, uses only science-backed ingredients that help the body adapt to chaotic hormonal changes that naturally happen to many of us. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code HIDDENTRUECRIME at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code HIDDENTRUECRIME for 15% off today.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to countrymd.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's countrymd.com/energy.
The first witness called to the stand was Nicholas LaFleur from the Santa Fe Police Department. He was the first individual from law enforcement on the scene after Helena Hutchins and Joel Souza were shot. It's no secret that the Santa Fe Sheriff's Office has faced a lot of criticism for how they handled the investigation. Kerry Morrissey conducted the direct exam and asked Nicholas LaFleur about the safety measures on set, the medical response, Alec Baldwin's interactions with witnesses, and the ongoing investigation. The jury saw a lot of body cam footage from Nicholas LaFleur's lapel camera that he was wearing when he arrived at the scene. She wanted to show the jury that the scene itself was chaotic and something that the small Santa Fe Police Department did their best with, even though it clearly wasn't perfect. Also, the body cam showed Helena when emergency personnel arrived on scene, still alive, still moving, responding to commands of medical personnel reminding her to breathe deeply, breathe deeper. And you saw the chaos and the fear, and you saw a woman fighting for her last breaths. The next witness was Timoteo Benavides. He is now a retired Santa Fe Police Department lieutenant who was in charge of the day shift when the shooting happened. During his testimony, the prosecution presented the gun used in the shooting. Timoteo Benavides identified the gun and testified that the armorer, Hannah Gutierrez Reed, handed it to him before he placed the gun in the front seat of his car and locking it, which again, not the best police work to secure evidence, but he did his best to explain why he did things the way he did. He went on to say that when he checked the gun, there were no rounds in it. However, Benavides admitted he didn't know who else handled the gun between the shooting and when it was given to him or what happened to the rounds. He also told the jury that he found loose weapons and loose ammunition on the prop cart. Next to testify was Joseph Lujan, a detective at the Santa Fe Sheriff's Department. Lujan testified for the prosecution detailing how the director, Joel Souza, was treated for his injury. Marissa Papel was called next to testify. She is a crime scene technician and was on the scene after the shooting. She testified that she found 5 suspected live rounds on the set of Rust, along with 1 spent casing. A lot of her testimony focused on how things were collected, searched, and what the results of the testing were after boxes of ammunition were sent in to see whether or not there were live bullets. The defense started their cross-exam on Thursday, July 11th, led by Alex Spiro. He wanted to show that the investigation wasn't complete or thorough at all, and in fact, it was a poor job through and through. He absolutely grilled the crime scene technician. One name that was brought up a lot during the testimony was Seth Kenny. Seth Kenny owned PDQ Arm and Prop, the prop firearm supplier for Rust. He was also brought up a lot in the Hannah Gutierrez retrial. as the defense in the case argued that Seth Kenny and the film's prop master, Sarah Zachary, were trying to blame everything on Hannah.
After what you said and what you heard from your fellow officer, it is true, as you've testified previously, that you did go out to seek the source of that lethal round, right?
Please rephrase your question as to the word seek.
Sure. After you said what you said and the officer said what he said, is it not the case that you made it a priority to try to find the source of the lethal ammunition, correct?
Our priority was to find the facts of what had happened in this situation.
And one of the steps that you took that we talked about, by searching the truck, by going to Seth Kenny, by getting a PDQ, one of the things you then did was you did seek out and try to find the source of the lethal ammunition, correct?
Yes.
And as you were doing that, you continued to work with Corporal Hancock, right?
Yes.
You would see her and the prosecutors often, right?
I would see Corporal Hancock more often.
And you testified previously about the search for the lethal ammunition at the trial of the armorer, correct?
Yes.
A question came up at that trial of this issue of, did Seth Kenny really provide the ammunition to Seth or not, right?
Yes, I believe that came up.
Okay. And eventually there was a verdict in that case, right?
Yes.
And a good Samaritan walked into the police station and gave you the lethal ammunition, didn't they?
After the Hannah Gutierrez trial, there was an individual that came to the police station and stated they had ammunition.
And they turned in the ammunition?
Yes.
And they gave it to you, right?
Yes.
And they told you that this was the ammunition that ended up with Seth Kenny that killed Ms. Hutchins, right?
I do not recall all of their statements.
Who did you tell about that?
During that conversation, my Lieutenant Brian Brandle, was with me, and Detective Hancock was aware of that individual, that he had come to the sheriff's office.
And you never vouchered that and turned it over to the defense, did you?
It was a doc information situation.
I don't know what that means. Can you just explain it to me?
Meaning that I was instructed by my lieutenant to create a doc info report on it.
And I mean, what does that mean?
Means we're documenting information that this individual came and gave this ammunition to us.
Okay, but you didn't, I mean, he told you it had to do with the Rush shooting, correct?
Yes.
And he told you actually that he was a police officer in a neighboring county, right?
I believe he said he was a retired police officer, yes.
And he told you you all had been duped by Seth Kenny, didn't he?
In
words and substance, didn't he?
I don't recall that, no.
Okay, and he said to you, I'm willing to fill out a witness statement, right?
No, I don't recall that.
He told you that the rounds came from a green ammo can, didn't he? Did you take the rounds that were provided to you? By the way, they were Starline Brass Nickel Primer Live, weren't they?
I don't recall.
You don't recall? Really?
That is what I said.
He told you the reason that he was coming in is because he didn't trust law enforcement on this case.
Well, you know what? She's going to object to hearsay, and you're going to say effect on listener.
Okay.
Well, you're going to have to lay your foundation better. You are.
So, well, let me ask this question. How come law enforcement didn't voucher this with the rest of the evidence in the Rust case?
I'm not sure what you mean by the word voucher.
How come you didn't inventory it and put it with all the rest of the evidence in the Rust case?
I was instructed to put this in as a doc information case, which I did, and it is under that case number.
You buried it?
No.
Your lieutenant?
There is a supplemental report on it, and that was placed into evidence.
What, did you ever turn that over to the defense?
I have not turned over anything to the defense. My information goes through the sheriff's office.
Are you aware of whether the sheriff's office ever informed the defense that a good Samaritan came in and turned in this ammunition?
I do not know.
When the defense came to view the Starline brass, nickel primer, live ammunition with you, you didn't show them this, did you?
I did not have an evidence viewing with the defense. That was my coworker.
Your coworker didn't show this to the defense, correct?
I do not know.
Do you have any reason to believe your coworker showed this to the defense, given that it wasn't put in the same inventory as the Rust case?
No.
Did you or anyone from the sheriff's office ever tell the armorer or her lawyers that a good Samaritan came in after the verdict and gave you this information?
I do not know.
But you do agree. He did tell you that Seth said this was the evidence from the shooting, correct?
I don't recall what he stated, what someone else stated.
And you told him he didn't have to write a witness statement. Law enforcement was going to type up a report on it today, right?
I never stated any such thing about a witness statement.
He offered to provide a written witness statement so that it was clear. Did he not?
I do not recall that happening.
Okay. Did you give him assurances that you would type up a report on it?
I don't recall providing assurances to him.
Did you tell him that you would write up a report on it?
I don't recall doing that either.
Do you deny it?
No.
So when you testified earlier that you never found the ammunition that killed Ms. Hutchins, that wasn't true either, was it?
Can you rephrase the way you stated that?
Sure. As you sit here today, having had a good Samaritan turn in these 45 rounds into the precinct, right?
If that's what you're discussing,
yeah. Yeah. You don't know whether or not you have in your possession the live rounds that killed Ms. Hutchins, do you?
The live round that killed Ms. Hutchins has been fired. Are you asking me about a connection between those live rounds and other ones?
I'm asking you, as we've talked about at great length, whether or not you withdrawn. I'm asking you, isn't it the case that law enforcement likely has the matching rounds to the ammunition that killed Ms. Hutchins?
I do not know.
And you do not know because you made a doc report about this and did not put it with the rest of the Rust evidence, correct?
Those rounds were not placed with the rest of the Rust evidence, correct?
Nor were they sent to the FBI for testing with the Rust evidence, were they?
No, they were not.
Ms. Poplar, are you a detective?
No, I am not.
Did you interview any of the witnesses in this case?
No, I did not.
You didn't interview Mr. Baldwin?
No.
You didn't interview Ms. Gutierrez?
No.
Mr. Spiro was asking you about the Good Samaritan who arrived at the Sheriff's Department after the Gutierrez trial. Can you tell the members of the jury when the Gutierrez trial was? Would you take end of February, beginning of March?
Yes, that sounds more accurate.
Okay. Do you recall the Good Samaritan's name?
I do not.
Would you recognize it if I said it to you?
Yes.
Troy Teske.
Yes, that was his name.
Are you aware that Troy Teske is a close friend of Hannah Gutierrez Reed's father?
No, I did not know that.
Are you aware that Troy Teske had his own motivations for wanting to place blame on Seth Kinney to help Hannah Gutierrez?
Objection leading, objection irrelevant.
Overruled, overruled.
Please, answer.
No, I had no knowledge of that.
Now, to be clear, is Mr. Baldwin charged with involuntary manslaughter for bringing live rounds on the movie set?
No.
Is Mr. Baldwin charged with involuntary manslaughter for loading a live round into the gun?
No.
Has a person already been tried and convicted for those things?
Yes.
Alec's defense today had a major blunder, to say the least. They brought up evidence about Alec's behavior after the shooting, implying he was distraught. In response, prosecutor Carrie Morrissey argued to admit additional evidence into trial, including a statement Alec Baldwin made, which is Baldwin acknowledging the danger of ammunition and stating, quote, blanks can kill, end quote. Now, while the attorneys were arguing over what could and cannot be admissible in court due to the defense messing up, Alec did not look happy. Why would he? His team messed up, and now some unsavory details could be brought back as evidence. Discussions about a family trip after the shooting and how he didn't want to cancel his wife and children coming to visit New Mexico. And then, again, his knowledge about dummy rounds being able to hurt people or kill people. Well, during this moment, Alec stood up and walked out of the courtroom. Media outlets and creators all jumped. They went wild. Why was he walking out of the courtroom? Was it walking out in defiance? Was this the aggression Alec has shown us in public before? Why did Alec just leave the room? Well, I have the inside scoop. I too watched him leave the courtroom. So I ran into the hallway and I saw Alec walk to the bathroom. I saw him then finish, come out of the bathroom, and return as an attorney handed him a coffee cup covered in a lid, and he said thank you as he actually limped back into the courtroom. The limp has been something I've seen him do for the last 2 days. I later confirmed that a person sitting two rows behind Alec in court heard Alec say to his attorney that he needed to use the restroom, and that is why Alec Baldwin got up, and then he returned directly after. Day two ended with gun experts. They both stated that the gun Alec Baldwin was holding when Helena Hutchins was shot could not have gone off without the trigger being pulled. Justin Neal, a sales rep for the gun company that imports Pieta firearms, testified he had never heard of a gun firing itself, despite taking multiple customer service calls daily for nearly 6 years. And then Pieta himself took the stand and said the gun could not fire if the trigger was not pulled. And he explained that all guns go through quality control testing by the Italian government. Each day in court, human rights attorney Gloria Allred sits on the front row, representing the family, the parents of Helena Hutchins. After day one of court concluded, after Alec Baldwin and his family left the courthouse and were driven away in their dark-colored SUVs, and after media was dispersing for the day, I walked up the sidewalk and away from the courthouse to catch my Uber. As I stopped to wait, I saw Gloria Allred walking toward me or walking away from the courthouse, leaving for the day. I could not help but stop her and ask her if there was anything that she wanted to say to me. I wanted to know what Gloria thought. All I had was my phone, and amongst the sound of the generators pushing power into the remaining media cameras, I asked her for an interview, and it turns out she had a lot to say. Take a listen.
Tell me really quickly, Gloria, why are you here, and what do you want people to know?
I'm here because I represent the mother of the victim, Helena Olga, the father of the victim, Helena Hutchins, his name is Anatoly, and the younger sister of Helena, and her name is Svetlana. They're all in Ukraine.
Yes.
It's almost impossible to leave at this point. We live in Kyiv, which, as you know, there's a lot of bombing going on there.
Yes.
It's a war zone. So,
heartbreaking.
I'm representing them not only in a civil lawsuit, but as their victim's rights attorney in this case. And they want the voice of Helena to be heard, who she was. So I brought a photo, if I could show you, of Elena and her mom and her child and his in happier times. And I think that's important because yesterday, Alec Baldwin arrived along with his entourage and his wife and youngest baby. I don't know if that was a public relations stunt.
Right.
To get, and I think it was cynical and calculated, perhaps, to get sympathy from the jurors if they were seeing what was happening. But, of course, Helena also had a child. That child no longer has a mother. And my clients no longer have a daughter who is a mother, no longer have a sister.
Right.
So they can't be here. They want accountability as the father. And as Holy said in a statement I read for him at the victim impact sentencing hearing for Hannah Gutierrez,
mm-hmm.
when she was convicted of involuntary manslaughter mm-hmm. in the same courthouse, that he would like everybody who is responsible to be accountable. So we're here to see the criminal justice system and jury will decide that he should be accountable for involuntary manslaughter, which is a crime if proven. It doesn't involve having to intentionally kill someone,
mm-hmm.
but it does involve negligent handling of a firearm or hand-drawing a firearm without due caution
mm-hmm.
and care and circumspection. So that's what we're here about. They also need to hear all of the truth about what happened that could have led to the death of Helena. May she rest in peace. So I will be communicating with them about much of the evidence that was heard by the jury.
Thank you.
Painful, especially the videos. There are many, many videos that were shown for.
I know. I was wondering how you felt about those videos being shown today.
Well, I think Olga, Helena's mom, were in the courtroom and saw her loving and loved daughter in her last moments as she was being treated by medics and then put on a stretcher, taken out, put into an ambulance that taken, basically she was put in a helicopter, see the helicopter landing,
yeah.
and taken to a hospital. Have everyone doing their best to try to save her life, the medics.
Yeah.
It would have been so heartbreaking that I think she would have had to run out of the courtroom. So in that way, I'm glad that she did not have that pain to see it. But still, I'll tell her as much as she feels she yeah. is able to hear. But I'm glad there is so much video being shown, and law enforcement has it on the set, because it really helps everyone to understand what was going on.
Bearing witness to it, I think, is
bearing
important.
Bearing witness after the yeah. shooting.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more video evidence than I have ever seen in a number of criminal trials.
I know that you had stated before that Alec Baldwin is not above the law. Is that?
He's not above the law. Celebrities are not. And we'll see what the jury decides, if he violated the law or not. You know, there's going to be expert testimony,
mm-hmm.
the prosecution said in their open, in reference to what is the standard of care in handling a firearm. There'll be expert testimony that anyone, and that there's no exception for actors, who handles a firearm and directly points it at someone should assume it is loaded. Because if you have a firearm, you aim it at another human being, it could destroy them.
And it did.
Is what was said in court this morning. And that is why you should assume it's loaded. Whether or not you've checked it, that's what you should assume. But they're going to allege that as a prosecution, they're going to show what the guidelines were for safety protocols on the set. And the argument of prosecution is that he violated those safety protocols.
Yes. Yeah.
Anyway, I thank you for asking
me
to do this, because this case is not just about a celebrity, Alec Baldwin. We want to be sure that everyone understands there were two victims, one of which died, and that's Helena. And so we are here to show her photos and hear about the family that she left behind. One last thing.
Yes, please.
The defense said this morning that Alec Baldwin called her family afterwards.
Really? Really?
And said what he said to them. Well, her family also.
What did he say?
Parents.
What did he say?
Well, I'm saying this was in the argument presented by the defense.
Oh, right, right.
Okay. It was argument. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence presented yet. And I don't know what evidence will ever be presented on that argument. It's not evidence. Argument, right? But I can tell you, a woman who is married and died, her family is not just her husband or even just her child. Elena was very close to her parents, even though they were in Ukraine. She was here in the United States. We have evidence of that. And he has never to this day called her grieving mother, her grieving father.
Never once.
Or her sister once to say, I'm sorry.
So Alec Baldwin has never once called.
Despite the fact that I have urged him publicly to do so for many, many months.
And he hasn't.
He has not. He could have had his attorney contact me for their phone number. I would have arranged it. I know the family would have loved to hear from him. To this day, he's never called them to say, I'm sorry. Even to say it was an accident. Nothing.
Wow.
So that's not a legal requirement for him to do it, but to me, it's an act of human decency.
And you make that request to him today, too.
Well, I continue to say, I think that's what a human being should do. I don't think someone should have to be told that. It's just a decent thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria. Thank you so much.
Okay.